4 p.m. shall we begin the meeting?
Thank you very much. Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Bus Rail Subcommittee meeting for this beautiful Monday until you go outside February 10th. And I think we start with the roll call by Anu.
Sure. So thank you, Chair Kaplan. Before I get to the roll call, I'll just...
Do I need to call the meeting officially to order?
Oh, I was just going to go to the announcements, general announcements, and then...
Sure.
Should we continue? Okay. So good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, February 10th, 2025. This meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. Just to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. And if you would like to make comments, you can press star 9. And that will raise and lower your virtual hands. Everyone who's on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you click on the raise hand icon, that will raise or lower your virtual hands. I would request everyone to please stay on mute unless speaking, because it helps eliminate any external noise. Just a reminder that we do have 2 American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. And therefore, when speaking, please state your name before you start making your comments, because it helps them in doing their job. It also helps everyone who's listening on the phones. And when people listen to the audio, it helps them as well. I just want to state quickly that we do have a public comment section for this meeting. If we have any members of the public who would like to make public comments for any bus and rail related issues, please let us know. Either you can raise your virtual hands when we begin the section, or if you're able to send a chat message, please send me one so that I can put all the names on the list for public comments. Chair Catherine, I can go ahead and take the roll call and then read the agenda out loud.
Okay, please do. Thanks, Anu.
Sure. So when I call out the names of the AAC members, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster.
Here.
Thank you. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia. Mr. Calabia is probably going to be a little delayed in joining today.
Audio now unmuted. Zoom workplace.
Present.
This meeting is being recorded.
Yancy?
Here.
Thank you. Tuan Farmer. Debbie Fisher. I just want to state for the record that Debbie Fisher may be late in joining the meeting today. Marcy Goldstein.
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Thomas actually had informed that he may not be able to join the next few meetings. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Sarah Roth.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. And just to state for the record, Ms. Rush is going to be out for a few meetings. Paul Semmelford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simono. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. I am going to go ahead and read the agenda out loud. But before I do that, I will share my screen. So when the agenda is visible on my screen, please confirm. Good.
I see it.
Thank you. All right. So we just finished the roll call of the committee members. The next step will be review and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. Since we did not have the AAC meeting this month, we will also review and approve the AAC board report before Mr. Sheehan presents it to the board this month. The committee will have a few discussions today, starting off with Prince George's County service updates. There is an open discussion followed by post-budget hearings discussion, and then we go to public comments. The meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. And at this point, Chair Kavanaugh, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, let's look at the agenda that we just saw. Are there any proposed adjustments to the agenda? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So move.
Seconded.
And, thanks very much. All in favor?
Aye.
I don't hear any opposed. The agenda is approved. For the prior meeting minutes, which were sent to us via ANU, are there any changes or adjustments that anyone would like to propose to them? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Yes.
Second.
Great. Thank you very much. Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved. We have the review and approval of the AAC board report. Is that something that we take care of or you take care of?
Well, go ahead, Steve. You're doing fine. I just need it approved by the committee okay. of the whole. You're doing great.
All right. Look, well, let's first see if there are any proposed adjustments or changes to the AAC board report.
The only thing that I would add, since Paul is not here, is that any new things that we learn through either this meeting or the Metro Access meeting that we'll add to that report will be adopted as revisions.
Great. Thank you, Pat. Hearing no changes, do I have a motion to approve the AAC board report?
I do. Yes.
And a second?
Great. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The AAC board report, with the caveat that Pat just mentioned, is approved. The next item in the agenda is a Prince George's County service update committee discussion that we're going to have. And Sandy, I'd ask that you lead this because nobody has been more proactive than yourself in this area. Would you mind?
Sure, no problem.
Thank
I
you.
Done my homework adequately. I don't know. Anyway, so there was a really good presentation by Mr. Efon Aponte at our last meeting in January, outlining how Prince George's County has, starting in 2023, done us, you know, customer outreach type stuff like WMATA does, listening sessions, ride along, talking to bus riders. And they've been working with WMATA on bus route changes in Prince George's County in coordination with planned bus route changes by WMATA in Prince George's County, which is all very positive. This is all really good news. And they did say that about 75% of bus ridership or bus routes, not one or the other or both, in Prince George's County is on WMATA buses. And They do acknowledge that in Prince George's County, there will be some increases in bus routes planned up towards the Purple Line and up towards where there was, and I guess there still is, a planned new FBI headquarters, although in the current climate, I can't tell what's planned and not planned these days, but that's just my personal opinion that Mr. Aponte, you know, did discuss that bus routes were being planned in accordance with the presumed new FBI headquarters. He did acknowledge that the southern part of the county, they would like to increase bus routes. And I'll just give an aside. I was able to pick up a hard copy printed version of the bus routes that WMATA has planned in the Better Bus Network redesign that goes into effect the 1st of July, as does some changes for Prince George's County bus routes that are planned to change around July 1st in coordination with the Better Bus Network WMATA bus route changes. I have not had a chance to look at that map in detail to see how much coverage there is of WMATA bus routes, and I need to dig up some maps for Prince George's bus routes to see what the coverage is for the county. My first impression several weeks ago when I was trying to look into this is that the sort of radius out from the center of DC in, let's say, Fairfax County, Montgomery County, Prince George's County is fairly similar, although it may be a bit less in southern, going sort of to the southeast in of the city in Prince George's County. And that's the area that Denise Rush has talked about a lot. And Prince George's County has said for years that they would try to improve bus routes. Now, in addition to the bus in Prince George's County, there are also some micro transit systems that serve. They're kind of like paratransit in a very small geographic area, is my best understanding. Going back to Mr. Ponte's discussion, he said that the goal was to increase Prince George's County, the bus and microbus transit, to improve it towards being 7 days a week. Much of the bus system, several of the bus routes and microtransit routes are only 5 or 6 days a week now. So the goal is to increase the days that those bus routes are functional, have buses on them, and also increase the hours. That's a similar goal to what WMATA bus Better Bus Network redesign is doing also, because they, WMATA has heard loud and clear, Prince George's County has heard loud and clear, that bus rider satisfaction would be higher, being functionally being able to use the bus routes would be vastly improved if the service days were increased and the service hours were increased. Okay. I think I'm running out of brain power. It was a long discussion with Mr. Aponte. They promised that when the, and I couldn't tell, I thought at one point we were promised that we would see a draft that we could put input into, but then I've also heard that we'll get the final report and we can give feedback. So I'm not quite sure, but sometime either soon or sometime before July 1st, we should see either a draft report or a final report. It has to go through, you know, some county and state approval. But, you know, I felt very reassured that they are working with WMATA. I'm a little bit discouraged that everybody's budgets are tight. Prince Maryland State's budget is in the red, and I believe Prince George's County budget is also in the red. So for Prince George's Public Works and Transportation, PGW&T, they're underfunded for buses. So one of the things that they're talking about doing in their Prince George's redesign is taking out some of the bus stops where there are a lot of bus stops close together on a route, which seems fair and reasonable. WMATA doesn't have bus stops too close on any given route. What I didn't hear was that how much money they were going to put towards or how firm their plans were to improve bus stops, improve like seating and lighting and access to bus stops, you know, paved sidewalks, functional road crossovers that are safe for people to cross busy roads to get to a bus stop when, you know, a bus stop on one side of the road is the closest bus stop and you'd have to walk, you know, a half a mile or three quarters of a mile on the other side of the road to get to the nearest bus stop. Wouldn't it be nice to just cross this busy road safely? So Mr. Affante was very upfront, and I really appreciated his presentation. And I do believe Prince George's County is open to feedback, but exactly how and when we can give them that feedback is a little unclear to me. Okay, I think that wraps it up. If anybody has any questions, I'll try to field them. I think Patrick and Stephen will help back me up trying to answer questions.
Sure. Thanks, Sandy.
I actually also want to share that we do need to adjust the agenda. I just noticed something that we have a member from our government relations team, and she would like to share some information with the AAC. So whenever you would like, we can have Reem Rayef give that information as well.
Okay. Anu, are we doing that now or at some point in the future?
If you, Sandy, it's your preference. If you'd like, we can have Reem give information now and continue with the PG County afterwards, or we can complete that topic and then we can come back to Reem.
No, I'm perfectly fine with we take a break. I assume this is a, you know, 5, 10, 15 minute presentation that we're squeezing in. And I think in deference to people coming to speak to us, we should give them time when they are available.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you. So I would ask Reem Rayef to come off of mute and, you know, please share the information you would like.
Much appreciated, everyone. And thank you, Sandy. Can everyone hear me okay?
We can, yes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So I'm joining by an invitation from my colleague, Chris. I work on the government relations team at Metro, and I wanted to make sure that this group was aware of a bill coming before the Maryland House of Delegates. The bill basically expands the existing permission to use the Clear Lanes program, which is enforcement of protected bus lanes. So anywhere there's a bus lane right now, the state of Maryland is allowed to use Clear Lanes, which is kind of automatic traffic enforcement, to grab pictures of license plates of cars that are driving in the bus lane and ticket them for being where they're not allowed to be, which is the bus lane. But the way that the law is written right now, that restriction doesn't extend to the bus stops, which is a really big issue for efficiency, but also for safety and accessibility to the bus stops. And we know from our experience using the Clear Lanes program in DC that that the lack of enforcement of bus lanes at bus stops is a really big issue. So essentially the bill that is coming up, and I'll drop it in the chat, would say we're allowed to use the Clear Lanes program at bus stops as well as at bus lanes. We are going to be sending someone to testify in support of this bill on February 21st at 1 o'clock p.m. We'll be sending someone in person in Annapolis, but you can also register ahead of time to testify virtually about this bill and share your thoughts. So I'm happy to discuss this further or take any questions, but I didn't want to take too much time and just want to make sure that people are aware of this bill and why we think it's important to support it.
This is Anu, and I just want to say that if any of the AAC members have any comments or questions about this bill, would like to get some additional information, this is the time to ask. And if you do not have any questions at this time, Rico, you have a question. Go ahead.
Can you please explain to me what I'm curious about this bill, okay? I'm curious about this bill. You did say February 21st. Is that correct, Claire?
That's correct.
That's on a Friday, right?
Is that a Friday?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct, yeah.
So what is this bill going to do? And I'm just want to know more about this bill.
Yeah, so this bill would basically say that the Clear Lanes technology, that which basically just means we have a camera on our buses, and Montgomery County can have cameras on their buses. It allows public transit administrations to put cameras on their buses to enforce bus lanes, which means that they grab pictures of cars that are driving in the bus lane and ticket them, and that helps alert people to know, like, hey, you're not supposed to be in the bus lane because this lane is dedicated for buses and not private vehicles. So right now that technology is being utilized in bus lanes, but not at bus stops, which means that sometimes we have cars that are parked in front of bus stops, which prohibits buses from Metro or from any other transit agency from getting directly to the curb at the bus stop. And that makes it hard for somebody who's waiting to get on the bus to actually board the bus. And we've seen people kind of walking around parked cars into traffic to get to the bus, or kind of having to walk down the block because there's a bunch of cars parked in front of the bus stop to get on the bus. And so in order, basically what this bill would do is say, we are allowed to use this Clear Lanes technology to enforce bus lanes, not only in the lane of traffic, but also at the bus stop, which is exactly how it's already done in DC. And so the way we're thinking about this is, you know, people in Virginia deserve to ride the bus safely, just like they do in DC. So that is basically what it would do. It would basically expand the program to so that it is equal to how it is implemented in DC right now.
Okay, so how do I register? I want to testify on this bill. How do I register for virtually? And another question, will they provide an ASL interpreter for the hearing on the 21st of February?
Two great questions. I am not sure about the ASL interpretation, but I will follow up. And I can also find the link to register and send it in the chat in just a moment. Does that work okay?
Okay.
Yes.
Or no, can she send it to everyone? The one she sent out?
Yes, Rico, I was about to say that. Ms. Raya is going to put it in the chat. I will also send that in to all the AAC members via email.
Reem, I have a question for you, Steve Kaplan. What would the opposition to this be, and why would there be an opposition to something which seems so vanilla, if you will?
Some of the opposition is related to concerns about privacy and what is done with kind of pictures of people's cars. I think there's kind of a general feeling from some of the opponents that, you know, we don't need more kind of automated camera enforcement and that this is a violation of privacy, but the program only captures images of license plates, which are, you know, publicly available and not considered, you know, private information. And so so it's not like it's, you know, capturing photos of people's faces or retaining that information. But that is kind of the general sentiment around opposition as I understand it.
Okay, are there any comments or discussions or further questions to Reem?
I see Sandy's got,
Sandy
got their hand up.
Sandy?
Hi, thank you so much for the presentation. You've answered two of my questions, but one more. I may not have been paying close enough attention. So clear lanes and taking pictures of cars blocking bus stops, does that mean all bus stops, or does that just mean bus stops that have bus islands, special bus lanes to for the bus stop?
Realized that I was muted. I believe it means all bus stops because I think everywhere it is illegal to park at a bus stop, whether or not there is a bus priority lane there.
Excellent. Thank you.
Reema, I have another question.
Sure.
So presumably, would this result in a fine or any kind of punitive action with the photograph taken?
Yeah, according to the legislation, it results in a fine that kind of maxes out at $75. You can't be fined more than $75 for parking in the bus lane or at a bus stop.
Okay, it looks like we have asked all the questions we're going to ask on this room.
Oh, I think
Steve,
thanks
well.
Very much for joining
hey,
us.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah,
Pat. Yeah, I had my hand raised. Yeah.
Just oh, I, you know, I'm so sorry, Pat. Please.
No,
sorry
problem.
About that.
I might have missed it because I had the background, some stuff going on in the background. But have we been able to measure the impact of these buses and the bus lanes and how widespread this is?
We definitely have that for DC because the program has kind of been in effect for some time. And mm-hmm. I'm working on securing that for our testimony, and I can make sure that that gets to you all as well.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Good.
Sure.
Numbers are always.
That's a great question. Yeah, for sure.
Numbers are always good. Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve,
no problem.
Steve, this would be great for this committee to be aware of that. That falls right in your wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Hi, this is Sarah. I had a comment and I can't for the life of me figure out how to raise my hand on a device I'm on.
Go ahead, Sarah.
I just wanted to say thanks for this presentation, and I think it really is important. And I would say in particular for those people that use assistive devices or for folks who have vision issues, might be using a white cane or something, trying to get around a parked car that is in front of the bus stop can be incredibly difficult, if not impossible, especially if there's not a curb cut that is right there. So I think it's something that really is important to this committee. And I'm guessing that the best people to speak would probably be residents of Maryland, which I am not, but that's just sort of a guess on my part. Is that right?
I think that that's true. And at the same time, I imagine that if you're a resident of DC and can testify to the benefit of having a kind of bus stop enforcement, that would be worthwhile as well. We were going to have a DC resident testify, so
okay,
so it's okay. It's allowed at least.
Well, I'm a Virginia resident, but anyway, I just wanted to say thumbs up. I do think this is something important for our committee. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, Reem, we see this all the time. I'm sure you know in DC, where the place where the bus is supposed to stop is with a truck or with a vehicle, and the driver may or may not be in the vehicle. And, you know, it creates, you know, besides the complexity for the bus operator, it creates a danger for the passengers who may have actually alight the buses from the street. So this is important. Hopefully it has a discouraging impact where once people realize there's a monetary penalty, people become more conscious.
That's the hope. We hope that soon no fares will be collected and everyone will respect our bus lanes and bus stops.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone,
appreciate
so much
it.
for your time and attention and questions, and I will follow up with those things that I promised.
Thank you.
Okay, well, shall we go back to our discussion of Prince George's County Service Transit?
Sure, thank you.
Sure. You know, Sandy, it's interesting how the county has been pushing their action plan, which initially they told us would be out in January and then later in the spring. And now it's getting close to the implementation date for the Better Bus Network. It's going to be funny if everything converges on July 1st, you know.
It'll be what it'll be. I think through Don Drummer on the WMATA board, what's the title of that board? That you know, maybe we can ask one more time. You know, I don't want to wear out friendships. You know, we're looking for information. We're not looking to criticize or harass Prince George's County. You know, they're working within, you know, 5,000 constraints that they have, I'm sure. But, you know, if they can share the information with us in a timely way, that would be really wonderful. So, you know, maybe it's time for another, you know, can somebody come to the March meeting? You know, somebody did come very last minute to the January meeting, and maybe we can reach out and invite them again to the March meeting for, you know, even if it's a 5-minute update, that would be better than silence.
And this is Anu. Sandy,
oh,
I just
Pat.
Wanted to share that was one of my plans to reach out to them and see if they have any update and if they can come back in March and share that, or at least give us a timeline when we should expect them with the next steps.
That would be wonderful, Anu.
Sure. And Pat has raised his hand. Pat, go ahead.
Yeah, the other little update, at least that I saw from the DMV Moves committee that's dealing with bus prioritization. They were talking about bus rapid transit, and Prince George's County was represented by the same individual who spoke to us, plus Victor was there also. And they were really pretty aggressive on the bus rapid transit proposals. Mm-hmm. Those proposals go before the DMV Moves Committee. They all get sort of prioritized and you know, within a big stack of proposals. But Prince George's County was very well represented and pretty aggressive with what they wanted as far as extending bus rapid transit, sending people who are effective in articulating that. And from the accessibility point of view, I've done my best to try to mirror their request. So I'm supporting what they're saying as far as priorities from the disability community, because I, you know, as I've stated to them before, I think that Prince George's County is weak in this area, and not pointing fingers at all, because we all know what the budget looks like. But they're working and they're doing their best at making sure that they can get some buses flowing through their system through bus rapid transit, and I think that's good. That's a good step. Now, does that mean that's a fixed route system and that extends throughout a lot of the areas that are now sort of pigeonholed? I don't know. Does it mean that it's a fixed route system and that Metro Access can go to these new other places? I couldn't get into that kind of discussion yet. So it'll be part of a proposal that will be, I'm really almost ready to go in May, June, May timeframe. And we'll see where we go with it. But they have those subcommittees ongoing, and that is one of the ones that I opted to be in. But there's a lot of maps and a lot of statistics, so I may be coming back to this committee to help me try to interpret which way to go with some of this stuff. That'd be great.
So this is Sandy speaking. Pat, when you say bus rapid transit and that Mr. Aponte and Victor Weisberg are pushing for it. Is that bus rapid transit referring to WMATA bus routes? I'm not aware that Prince George's County has bus rapid transit. Just could you clarify?
I'm thinking that it is WMATA buses that they would be using for the proposed bus rapid transit to try to improve service and efficiency throughout a long stretch of their roadways.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. One thing I'd like to acknowledge, and then Sandy, then I have a comment. You're making your way down to Metro headquarters today, so we now have a much better documentation than we did before. And I know the size of those documents because I looked at them myself during the Better Bus analysis. And so I don't know how you made it back. Sandy, it's interesting. I've been a little concerned since it's been kind of hopscotch between their timing of the completion of their work and the issuance of the updated report, and July 1st, whether at the end we're going to see that there may be some duplication in what the bus is. Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
I really think that they have been working in coordination with WMATA about looking at bus routes because WMATA, when I've spoken with WMATA, Better Bus Network folks, I was talking to Nick Perfelli before the comment session last Monday. And he acknowledged, there was some duplication of routes between WMATA and Prince George's County, the bus. And they were, both sides were trying to eliminate duplication and make it more efficient so that, if you can eliminate a little bit of duplication, you can put more service somewhere else, whether it's, time of day or geographic area was a little vague, but, every duplication you can eliminate that gives you, without spending more money, the opportunity for more coverage. And that more efficiency is one of the big pitches of WMATA's Better Bus Network redesign. It's like, they may have tweaked the exact route so that they have, a little less congestion or something. I really do believe both sides are working together to make it as good as possible. But, there's always money constraints. There's always this constraint or that constraint. Yes, I think it's unfortunate that it's pushing close to the actual rollout of their planned change in bus routes. But on the website, Prince George's County does say that they review their bus routes and they have the opportunity to tweak bus routes every 6 months. So, I'm not.
And Sandy,
there's more opportunities.
Look, I think at this point, it's better that they try to get it right since they've taken the, since they've taken the time to do it. We previously had, 2018 data to work with, and so do they. And I hope that the more time they're taking, the more, the more careful they're going to be in in finalizing what they're going to put out and making it compatible with what WMATA is going to implement on July 1st.
Pat wanted to say something, but just really quickly, I think we need to be cautious when we critique them for, being back way in 2018 was their latest information, because they were starting to do the Prince George's, let's call it Prince George's Better Bus redesign concepts. They were starting to do that in the fall of 2023. We just weren't aware of it. So we can't say, oh, they haven't done anything since 2018. we can say we weren't aware of anything since 2018, but they were starting to work on it. So we got to give them some credit for moving forward. Okay, Patrick, go ahead.
Right. Thank you. And I was just going to say what you were saying about the bus system within Prince George's County also extends to private bus systems that have sort of duplicated the some of the other bus routes that are out there already. So they're taking your strategy as you articulated it, Sandy, and they're also applying that to other private bus systems that are in the county that are actually duplicating the routes that are already there. So you've really got two areas of duplication, and they're simplifying that, and the same logic applies that, gee, if we can get these more coverage here, here, and here, we'll be a little more robust network. And in turn, that would be great. That may help coverage as far as, you know, metro access. But frankly, I would like to see them be building out the infrastructure, putting in more bus stops, putting in more sidewalks and that sort of thing. But I was reading something, you know, they're not the only place that's having problems with that. I was reading something in DC, and I forget the astronomical, I think it was something Tina would send out, the astronomical amount of areas that don't have sidewalk coverage and don't have, you know, bus stops in Washington, D.C. So it's a common problem, and anything we can do to get the infrastructure in place, I think it's going to help us.
Right. Sandy, you know, I don't recall us talking, all of us talking about the microbuses. And, you know, I'm wondering, are these microbuses vehicles that ride around the neighborhoods and kind of act like feeder buses? Or do they have specific routes that take people, let's say, to the nearest metro?
So I think what they are call and ride buses. But they only, as I see it, they kind of work within a small little defined area. But they also, at least the last, my last data, and Sandy, maybe you have better data, but a lot of them, I think in one set, you had to call and reserve it 2 weeks in advance. And then it worked between 9 and 3 in the afternoon, maybe 3 or 4 days a week, but not on weekends. And the thing that was really sad about it is because it was only in a small defined area, it wasn't considered fixed route. So paratransit couldn't work in that area because there wasn't a fixed route system that was in that area. So that would be one thing that I would want to see with either bus rapid transit or more coverage in Prince George's County. I would rather see it have a very much more robust bus system just in general, because that's good for the infrastructure. But that also would then allow us to have a more robust paratransit system if we need to. But my focus really is let's improve the bus system, and then more paratransit can follow.
Right. I'm not sure I can really add anything to what Pat said. So if this micro transit vehicle is restricted to a small geographic footprint, then great. If your grocery store is 5 blocks away or half a mile away and your church is close by and your doctor's office is close by, okay. But how often do we have to go, you know, more than a couple of miles to get to a hospital for dialysis or a doctor's appointment because we're seeing a specialist, or, you know, grocery stores, you know, change and whatever, you know, you're going to have some socializing with your friends. You know, we're allowed to use public transportation and therefore metro access and therefore abilities ride to do things for social reasons. You know, if you're going out to dinner with your friends and microtransit only runs until 3 in the afternoon, that's not helping you. So microtransit, I'm not sure how that concept got started. I commend it. It probably had its place and time, but I also think that it needs to be augmented significantly with other forms of transportation, accessible transportation.
Sandy, you know where I've seen that perhaps best used in Los Angeles, sprawling Los Angeles, where the individual neighborhood areas will have little microtransit vehicles that may move people to the nearest main street, or even to the nearest bus stop or metro, and take people if there's a mall, to take people to the mall. And the area of these may be confined to just a couple of miles, but to you know, to a city like Los Angeles, these are critical. Areas like Hollywood and West Hollywood and Beverly Hills, you know, are three that that have these, you know, little microtransit buses in addition to the regular transit buses of Los Angeles down the main streets.
And that may be a very valid use. I don't know if Jana Samuels or Amber Woods is on the call today. What we need is people who actually live in Prince George's County to explain how useful these are. Do they function as taking you to a metro stop or to a good bus route so that you can go places? But again, if they only run until 3 or 4 in the afternoon, that's kind of restrictive.
Hi, Sandy. Yes, I agree. It is very restrictive. It's 5 days a week. It only runs to 3 p.m. And, you know, this community should be unapologetically, you know, that we have social lives as well. It's not always education, work, healthcare, you know. So they're very restrictive, and you have to make your appointments 2 weeks out. You know, that's very challenging as well. So, and it doesn't help us with, well, yeah, it would be nice if Metro Bus and Rail, you know, had these routes so that we could use Metro Access, because this paratransit system is so restrictive.
And that's Janice Samuel, who forgot to say her name.
But I'm sorry.
No, you make a good point. And education and work does not always end before 3 or 4 in the afternoon. You know, life is sort of like 18 hours a day, I think.
It is.
You know, it's very interesting. You know, I remember, gee, it must have been a year or two ago, where Doris was making a point in the suburban areas of Northern Virginia that there were some areas that just weren't served. And she said, send a bus through, even if it's an hour or 2 hours, send a minibus, but just publicize the time and get some service in the area.
This is Sandy. Without beating a horse to death, out in Fairfax County, the Fairfax County buses that I take, the RIBS bus, it doesn't go too late. I think it goes till 7 or 8, maybe 9 o'clock, but still, it's certainly more than 3 in the afternoon.
Would anyone else like to join the discussion? It's kind of an exclusive, and it shouldn't be. Would anyone like to comment or have
This is Sarah, and I had raised my hand earlier, but then took it down because I don't live in PG County, so I really can't. I don't have the expertise to comment on what is or isn't happening there. But I had asked the question about the microtransit because I didn't know what they meant during the presentation, and I thought that they were saying that they were like shorter routes within certain neighborhoods, but that they were running constantly. Like here in Alexandria City, we actually have great bus transportation, but there's, I think, 2 routes that are specifically like a loop that just run pretty much through Old Town to different places, to the metro stops, which is, and that's what I had in my head, and that works pretty well because we hit, you know, basically most of the neighborhood to get you to a bigger transit stop, right? Either to the other bus stations or to the metro station or whatever. So if it really is, they're just talking about what the very limited things that Janice was describing, that is terrible. And actually, one of the reasons I moved out of Fairfax County and into Alexandria was because the neighborhood that I used to live in, I was a mile from the closest bus stop, and it only came about once an hour, and it was only during like rush hour time periods. And so it's one of the reasons I left, because there was no way I could have lived my life out there. You know, and I feel really bad for anybody who's in that situation. Anyway, it's my two cents.
This is Pat. I raised my hand. And it's interesting, we bring up terms like microtransit, and then the other term I've heard is micromobility. So I think the one thing that is important for people to do is to really find out what we're talking about when we mean, or what a person's talking about when they mean those terms. Sometimes I think it's micromobility can be confused with microtransit. So you're talking about these small commuter buses that have these odd hours and odd circular routes, and you have to call and reserve them, and you go from point A to point B. And then I've also heard bikes and scooters. Is that microtransit or is that micromobility? And so those terms sometimes are interchangeable. So not understanding exactly what we're talking about when we when those terms are used, it's important for us to understand, you know, if it's Prince George's County, have them tell us what they're meaning by that, by those terms. And it's just confusing all over the place. So if you're thinking bikes and scooters as part of micro transit or micro mobility or whatever, that's one thing. If you're looking at these vans, and I've heard the word interchangeably used, it's easy to get confused to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. Very interesting. You know, this is old history, but during the time of the pandemic, when many of the country's bus systems were contracting, Los Angeles downtown had quite a sizable number of these mini-sized buses. And I thought, and I put this in in an oral testimony one year, I thought they'd be great as express buses for WMATA to use. You know, instead, there are certain routes that require express and require local. And I thought they should be great. And they would run not on a fixed schedule, but on a turnaround. They move as quickly as they can and then return, and kind of be commuter buses. And so, Pat, it's going to be interesting for us to learn a little bit more about what micro transit means to them. Any further discussion on this, Sandy?
I was going to say it might be time to wrap it up, but you're right. Anybody else?
this is Anu. I do not see any other hands up.
Great. Why?
The Sandy, floor is yours, Steve. Let's move on to the next topic.
All right. Well, it's funny. The next topic is an open discussion. And Anu, I honestly don't know what you had in mind. So is what we were just doing the open discussion?
Well, if the committee does not have any other topic, we can surely move on to the post-budget hearings discussion. As a general practice, we've had discussions about the hearings and what people have learned, or if they have any feedback post the hearings. So that's why we have this discussion, since this is the first meeting after the budget hearings.
Okay, great. Thanks, Anu. Thanks very much.
Sure.
So let's move on to the budget hearings. And they certainly are current, since 5 o'clock today was the last opportunity we had to actually complete the questionnaire. And I think Tino is trying to get his scent, and that's one of the reasons why he's later joining us. And we had, you know, just to rehash, you know, we had three opportunities to respond and to comment, one being attendance at one of the sessions Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of last week. There was a virtual commentary session last Tuesday at noon online, and some of us submitted specific comments relating to this, and of course there was the questionnaire. And interestingly, the questionnaire, for those who might not have submitted it, followed the same format as last year's questionnaire and also permitted by checkbox making attachments. So some of us submitted our commentary separately and others submitted them with the questionnaire. So, it seemed like a pretty thorough opportunity for us to comment on some pretty significant items which WMATA is proposing in the budget. And I think some proactive items too. Shall we have a, would anyone like to start the discussion? Perhaps by presenting certain important comments that they made, if they did a submission, or even talking about the process in general. Pat?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I spoke on, because I had company this past week, of course I did, in the evening, so I couldn't get out in person to the hearings, but I spoke about the difference between last year and this year, and how last year, with the doomsday budget that we had, it was, everyone was sort of frenzied and not thinking that 25% of the metro access could be cut, this, that, and the other. And so, I felt a couple of things. One, that the, I think it's 11% increase in uptick on the rail and bus has just been tremendous. I also, and also knowing that a lot of the federal workforce is being asked to return at least sometime in February or March, so that you're going to see a lot of upticks in federal workers, I think, coming back to the office. Now, they may be grumpy federal workers, but they looks like they're going to be coming back in. And that should help the revenue coming into WMATA. I also complimented them on the fact that because of the increased revenue, they had to borrow less from the capital fund so that they could continue on with an impressive amount of upgrades that they need to do on the capital side. We know that what happens when that gets neglected, because we saw that years ago when the system was not being maintained as well as it is now. So I thought that there were some smart decisions made, and was also pleased that they were working on the larger scope projects over time, like how do we take the money and put it into a rainy day fund so that the system will work as a regional system once we get the budgets of DC, Maryland, and Virginia synchronized. And that could take a few years on the DMV move side. So I was optimistic. I think they've got a good handle on what needs to be done. I think what's most impressive is that they're talking, it's not just a WMATA problem. Well, now they're talking within the jurisdictions, DC, Maryland, and Virginia. And of course, everyone has budget issues now too. So, but at least they're talking. So you're not pitting sides against each other and pointing fingers. Was pleased about that. And I think that the new reality is being communicated amongst various stakeholders so that everyone gets an appreciation of what's going on and what's to be expected. And I think it looks like a pretty cooperative team, sort of long-range goals, medium-range goals, and short-range goals. And so we'll see how it comes out, with their recommendations. But us being able to get the status quo this year and not have to revert back to, what we were thinking about last year, I think was a win. And hopefully they can keep this going.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks for the insight on that. I learned a lot from what you said regarding the financial aspects and the balancing that's required. This is the most proactive budget or budget proposal that I recall seeing in quite some time. It has numerous forward thrusts. And for me, the most significant one, I think the one which may have the most impact, is the one they call open payment, where different forms of payment will be accepted on buses, on the cell phones, and also using credit cards. And numerous cities have implemented this. You know, I saw it, and I forget if it's either Los Angeles or San Francisco, but I think we've seen a lot of these already in Europe. London uses it almost exclusively. And I know for our visitors, which comprise a significant percentage of users, they're going to have a lot easier time. Our station managers are going to have a lot easier time because they won't have to be spending so much time next to the machines, working with first timers, pulling out that first Metro card, and then telling them that's going to cost them $2. And so this is exciting. One thing I want to mention is that in my comment letter, I suggested that the system be cumulative. And I'm not sure if I mentioned that before. You know, right now, if we buy a bus pass, it's a fixed amount, whether we use it, regardless of the amount of time we use it, or regardless of whether we're out of town and unable to use it. I've seen other systems in Europe which have it cumulative up to the maximum. Now, there is a way to handle it by canceling and then putting it back onto the card, but it's complex and it's not that easy using the current Metro system. You know, so I hope I put that in my comment. It's not part of the proposal, but I think that would encourage many of the holdouts that don't like the idea of committing to a total amount, not knowing how they're going to be using it for the week, and getting that getting that special price that comes when you buy the weekly bus pass. Are there any other comments or questions?
This is Anu. I do not see any hands up, and I do see that Tino has joined, just to make everyone aware.
So this is Sandy. Can I comment?
Please, go ahead. And then Sarah raised her hand, so Sandy, go ahead.
I was having trouble raising my hand. So this tap your credit card is going to be rolling out in March. That is just around the corner. So I wonder if, and I didn't think to ask whether, you know, weekly bus passes or weekly, you know, travel passes would go away. So Steve, I don't know if your question is going to disappear pretty soon, but.
Sandy, this is going to involve quite a bit of computer programming, I'm sure.
Right.
In the WMATA systems to make this happen and testing and what have you. We're not going to see it for some time, but
it's going to start to roll out very soon. Okay. So then what I wanted to just sum up really quickly, I thought the survey was pretty inclusive. I took the survey and it gave you, you know, a lot of good options. You know, it didn't steer you into this is the answer. You really did have, I thought, a fairly good range of answers and opportunities to comment or explain more. And my presentation, I tried to make the pitch that, you know, yes, thank you, WMATA, working with the counties, the jurisdictions to, you know, make bus routes as a as good coverage geographically, time-wise, days of the week as possible is really important to people. And what I did not manage to remember to say was anybody who, for economic reasons or environmental reasons, as well as disability reasons, does not have a car that they can drive. I did manage to say the disability reasons, but honestly, the fellow who presented after me made the pitch that, and I thought this is very valid for environmental reasons, less of a carbon footprint if we all take public transportation instead of hopping into our individual cars and driving around. And there are many people in the metro area who, for economic reasons, don't own a car and take public transportation. So that's a theme for arguing for continued good bus coverage. So,
okay, thank you. I see Sarah, you have your hand up. Sarah.
Well, I got my hand up and then I couldn't get myself off of mute. I don't know. I'm having trouble today. I just wanted to give a little bit of atmospheric. So I went to the first meeting and was there, and it was just Sandy and I and probably a smaller number of people than I was expecting. I've never been to one of these before, and I was not there for last year's, which I understand was a lot more animated and fraught with concerns. But it was interesting to me that all of the presentations that were done, and Sandy did a lovely job, by the way, not that you guys would doubt that. But of the three or four people that spoke, almost everybody just had nice things to say. I mean, people had suggestions and made some pitches, but in general, there was very little in the way of criticism going on. And the discussion that we had afterwards with the folks from the board that were doing the presentation was sort of, you know, it's a very different thing when you're not talking about cutting service and you're not talking about raising fares, then it seems to be, I don't know, a lot less people showing up and obviously a lot less angst going on. So I guess it shouldn't have been too surprising that it was so quiet and positive, but that was sort of what I took away from it. It was an interesting experience. And I did do my survey, although I found it somewhat difficult because I still don't feel like I know enough about some things as to sort of what to recommend, but I did my best. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm going to say something, and then I'm going to pass this on to our fearless leader, who I see has returned. Tino, it's great to see you. Let me comment on that, because, you know, I watched on YouTube, Virginia, and actually it came and went very quickly. By 6:30, the comments were completed, but I found the few people who spoke it, Sandy, you may have felt the same, extremely eloquent. They were all very focused on the budget. I think you were the shining star, but look, I don't know whether you got a plaque for that or not, but I felt it was very focused. I went to headquarters and there were many more speakers. As is often the case, some people focused on the budget and budget issues, and others had particular issues relating to their bus coverage and wishes and hopes, and also their concern relating to what they know about the impact of the Better Bus changes beginning July 1st. I think we had about 10 people to comment in at headquarters. Did anyone go to the Maryland session on Wednesday? Okay. Tino, let me pass this on to you. You're much better at this than I am.
Steve, please. Carry on. I mean, I'm at a loss as to where we are in the agenda and such. So please carry on. Thank you for doing so.
Tino, do you have a perspective relating to the survey and the different forms of submission and how you felt the process went? Because you are deeply involved, including today.
Unfortunately, stuck with a glitch, and none of my children around to help me. My wife did some help, but anyway, I heard a little bit about, if it has to do with credit card usage and getting through the fare gate, I must admit, I am wary of using my credit card that much or flashing it around. I only use my smart card, and hopefully it'll continue to be available for use, because that's what I would prefer. But better minds than I can deal with these things. And I guess if we're going with credit cards, and it makes it really easier and safer to use, then I'll eventually do so. But at the moment, I'm going to stick with my smart card.
It's very interesting you raised that. That is one of the few caveats I raised in the comments section of the online survey, where I, you know, I said open payment is great. Yes, yes, yes. But I said with the that the opportunity to continue to use a MetroCard, if one wishes, should be left in. And it was just that reason, except I feel, for me, I find a cell phone, pulling out a cell phone in public, being vulnerable, especially when boarding a bus and there may be a whole bunch of people around, almost everyone boarding, and maybe just one person who you really have to be careful with. And so that was my one caveat to that, that they, you know, on how they implement it.
So this is Sandy again. I would absolutely agree with you guys. Somebody steals my credit card, if I can't shut it down fast enough, you know, I could be out hundreds of dollars. If I lose my Smart Trip card, I'm out $20. You know, and jostling through, you know, juggling, holding my cane, holding my bags that I'm carrying, and flipping out a phone where, you know, it could be knocked out of my hand easily. I'm going to be very reluctant. I don't pay with Apple Wallet or Apple Pay anyway, but I'm not going to learn how to do that. So I really hope, like you guys, that a Smart Trip card is an option into the future.
And,
you know, it's very interesting. Very quickly, Pat. I'm sorry. Let me just respond to Sandy. It's very interesting. New York City has implemented this.
Yes.
And I actually have a transit card for New York City because I have an old friend who got me one, and I just keep renewing it and loading it whenever I get to New York. And I actually got a letter from them a few months ago saying that I am now able to eliminate my card. And they hinted that they were going to be eliminated, but they didn't precisely use that terminology. And so I'm hopeful that my card and the money I still have on it is not going to go away. And so, Sandy, I agree with you in what you just said. I think we have a consensus on that, Tito. What do you think?
I hope so. Yes.
Oh, Pat, I'm very sorry, Pat. Pat, you had your hand up?
No.
Patrick, you have your hand up. If you will unmute yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was talking. I did raise my hand. Not a problem, Steve. Good discussion, as I said. I think it might be useful because I guess I interpreted the credit card usage of having a credit card enabled, but just being able to walk through the fare card gates, and it would automatically be charged. So this isn't a sort of ongoing project, I think it would be worthwhile to have someone come in and brief us on what they're doing, when they're doing it, and whatever going forward. I think that would be great. Anything that, I mean, I agree with you. If it's pulling out my credit card and tapping it here, here, and here, I'm not comfortable with that at all. If it is something where, you know, your credit card is recognized and charged for a trip, I don't have a problem with that as I walk through the gate. That's fine. That would tend to be what I would be thinking would happen. But I'd love to have a briefing on this so we could all come up to speed be on the same page going forward.
Pat, interestingly, you know, following up what you said, the way London works, the way London keeps track of the usage is actually by in effect learning the credit in the system, the credit card that gets tapped, because in London, if you reach a daily maximum in using the bus, principally the bus system, it maxes out, just as you know, it maxes out at a certain amount. And the only way it can be done in London with the London system is by using the same credit card, at least during one particular day on their mass transit. And I was shocked. It works great. It cut me off at just where I needed to be.
Good. Yeah, that would be an interesting presentation for us to have on Bus Rail.
Okay.
This is Anu. I have already made a note for myself to invite someone to discuss this topic at some point.
Okay. Do we have any further comments on the budget hearing and specifics we'd like to share?
This is Anu. I do not see any hands up at this point.
Okay, why don't we move on to the public comments period?
Okay, and I just want to reiterate that any members of the public, if you're connected and would like to make some comments, you can raise your virtual hands. If you're on the phone, you can press *9. if you are on video conference, you can just click on the raise hand icon and that will raise your virtual hands. Or you can send me a chat message and we can take the comments in the order received. So far, we do not have anyone giving their public comments though.
All right. Well, we are making up a lot of time today. Since we do have some time, is there anyone who'd like to discuss something that may not have been on the agenda relating to bus rail, but perhaps might be of interest to us since we do have the time to do this? Oh, Sarah?
Yeah, I apologize. I feel like I'm talking way too much today. But there has been something that I've wanted to raise with this committee, and I wasn't sure what the right forum is. So since we have some time, I will shoot it out there and you guys can tell me if it belongs someplace else. So it has been raised to my attention by people that I know who use wheelchairs, power chairs, and take bus and rail frequently, that when trying to board buses in particular during rush hour, that they are often told that the bus is full. Now they're letting pedestrian passengers get onto the bus. The bus is not truly totally full, but they are told that they have to wait for the next bus to come. Now, I don't know the exact circumstances. So I couldn't give you bus routes. I couldn't give you spots. I couldn't give you any of these things. And I have asked people to get back to me like with better details than that to try to figure it out. But my question is really, so what is the protocol? Like what are buses or bus drivers supposed to do? Now, I am assuming that the bus sections that are supposed to be set aside for wheelchair passengers are not full of wheelchair passengers, that they are just full of regular passengers. So what is supposed to happen in those sorts of circumstances?
Sarah, this is Anu, and thank you for bringing that up. In any Metro bus, we have a capacity of two passengers using wheelchair. For us to accommodate any passenger using a wheelchair, we have to fold the seats. But the protocol is that if there are passengers seated on those seats, he or she would ask the passengers if they will move to another seat if available. If the passenger refuses not to move, they cannot force anyone. In that scenario, the passenger waiting for a bus at the bus stop may not be able to move. And I just want to emphasize that bus operators can only request. They are not in position to make anyone get up off of a seat, because people may have hidden disabilities, or, you know, everybody, most people are paying customers. So operators do not have that authority. If a passenger is waiting for a bus at the bus stop and they are not able to board, operators should inform the passenger. They should be reporting it to their bus operating control center. And then hopefully when the next bus comes up, they will be able to board that bus, but they are supposed to notify. And if you have any, or anyone, any customer has any incident that they experienced where a passenger could not board, please do let us know and we can get that reviewed further.
Okay, that's helpful. And we did discuss the issue of invisible disabilities, because I probably fall into that category. Most people seeing me would not realize that I am visually impaired because I don't always have my cane out. In fact, I rather rarely have my cane out. Mm-hmm. But the incidents that were described to me, the bus drivers did not attempt to make anybody move. They just shouted down, "No, there's no room for you," let a bunch of people on, and then took off and said, "Wait for the next bus."
So, and I just want to, you brought up a good point that, yes, there may be capacity on that bus for other passengers to board. Yes. So now that's the reason I'm saying that if there are any specifics of the incident, please do share with us or ask the person to share that with us, because if the bus operator followed the protocol or not can only be determined if we have specifics and we send the information to the bus division. They will do the investigation and then we will know what happened. Because if the bus operator reported it to the control center, it's going to be documented.
Okay. I will definitely ask them to add that to the list of things to check on. But I guess an additional part of this question is, if there is a passenger in a wheelchair waiting for the bus, are they supposed to load those people first or last? Because what tends to happen is like they just let a whole bunch of people on and there might have been room to fit that wheelchair on, but there isn't by the time people rush on in front of them.
I believe they board in first. They do board in first, actually.
Yeah, you know, in my experience on many buses, I've always seen the wheelchair passenger boarded first, and the seat pulled up by the bus operator as a prelude to the other people, other persons boarding, the other riders boarding. But I don't know, and so that must be at least the unstated policy. I've never seen it done the other way. In fact, I've seen bus operators when people start to board before the wheelchair passengers, I've seen bus operators put up their hand saying wait as the bus operator is pulling down the ramp initially. And then some people, there must also be a requirement that the ramp be raised and put back into place before the other passengers board, because the regular passengers don't board on the ramp once it's pulled down.
You're absolutely correct, Steve.
Yeah.
And thank you for mentioning that. And Sarah, I just want to add that it also depends on the location of the bus. Because if this is at the beginning of the line and there is a line of passengers to board, the operator will be able to ensure that the passenger who's using a wheelchair boards the bus first without letting other passengers board.
Right. Well, it makes sense from a placement standpoint, because you don't want passengers taking seats in the area that is within a minute going to be pulled up in order to make space for the wheelchair and the wheelchair passenger. And that's what might occur if the individual passengers are boarded first and they take up those seats. So, you know, it may be a logistical decision too.
Yeah, my usual experience, but again, I ride the Alexandria city buses a lot more often than I ride Metro bus, but I do ride them with my kids, both of whom use wheelchairs at times, is that usually they put the ramp down first and then they let the wheelchairs on. Although they usually do let other passengers walk up the ramps at that point, they don't bother pulling the ramp up. The impression that I was given in this case, or cases, there's multiple occasions apparently, was that it was rush hour and the buses were busy and they didn't want to stop and wait and let a wheelchair passenger on. So they just said, there's no space, which there may or may not have been enough space if they had tried, but they let a bunch of other people on and then they just took off because they were in a hurry. That was sort of the impression that was given. And I wasn't there, so I don't know.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Akino, I'm very sorry. You've had your hand up for some time. Please.
And I just want to state that Janice Samuel has her hand up, and people also would like to make a comment.
Sure.
Okay.
Go ahead, Janice. Janice, you're muted.
Yes, actually, my comment was about the earlier conversation of the Clear Lane hearing coming up in, was that on the 21st? And it was mentioned that, you know, Maryland residents were encouraged to speak at the hearing, or district residents, because they could speak to the benefit of a similar legislation in the district. But I wanted to emphasize that I really don't think it matters where in the DMV someone resides, because people take buses throughout. There could be someone who lives in Virginia who does take the bus that goes through a Maryland route. So I think we need to have a unity in our community of disabled and accessibility individuals, and everyone should be able to speak up on the benefit that they would have for such legislation, that we need to have access, clear access to the bus. So that's what my comment was. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Tino?
Just back to Sarah's observation about what happens on occasion regarding wheelchair users standing at a bus stop and then being passed by because presumably the operator sees no seating for them. For one thing, I've too often seen younger people, especially teenagers or students, just hop onto any seat, including those which are prioritized for people with disabilities. Whether a bus driver does anything about it or can do anything about it is another matter. The other thing is, you know, many of the, or at least a few of the bus stops in DC, and some, I think, even in Maryland, where I am, have these wonderful video screens that flash all kinds of messages. WMATA hasn't, to my knowledge, recently, or maybe ever, much used those wonderful screens to tell people about what is expected when a person with disabilities is trying to board, whether it be a bus or a train. I don't know who's in charge of that. Maybe we ought to have them come to a meeting, but we need them to think about programming, at least occasional, but regular messages about the needs of people with disabilities. And as an example, a wheelchair user, he gets passed by assuming that there's no room for him or her. I bet you often there are seats available, and maybe even seats that are prioritized for people with disabilities. It really help if we could drum it into the public, as well as reminding the drivers about what their obligations are. Now, that's not to say that we expect them to force people to get out. No way. With the way the public, and importantly, the way drivers and other operators or staff of WMATA are treated, I would not urge that they risk themselves to someone who's objecting to move or do something other than accommodate people with disabilities or the agent. There was, one other thing, since Janice is, is it, no, was it, it was Amber, right? That was just on. Amber, have you heard whether there's going to be an invitation to us to speak to your commission about transportation, in particular bus transportation? Just this morning in the Post, I saw there was a big article on Prince George's and the heavy hit they're taking, part of it due to the fact that there is a requirement that there be no tax increases on property. No tax increases on property. And so they're going to go deeper in debt the longer this goes on. Anyway, Amber, any word on whether we can address your commission, even just for a few minutes? Amber?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. I believe you're referring to Janice Samuels. Janice just made comments.
Oh,
Amber is not connected on the meeting today.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No problem.
I can't lay the responsibility on you, Janice. But if you're ever in touch with Amber or anyone else associated with the Prince George's Commission on Disabilities, please let them know that we'd appreciate a few minutes to talk about the situation we've been bringing up since last August. Thank you, Janice. Sorry to...
No worries. I'll be happy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sorry to mistake you for...
No worries.
Sandy?
Sandy? So I wanted to... This is Sandy. I wanted to piggyback on what Tino was saying. So my analogy is when I'm on a metro train, there will be occasional announcements. It's not to the point that it's too obnoxious. I mean, it gets drummed into my head. It's an audio announcement reminding passengers that there are seats reserved for seniors and people with disabilities. And I frequently have people offer me that seat when I get on the train. Sometimes I accept if I have a long ride. Sometimes I say, no. If I have a short ride and I've been sitting down all day and it feels kind of good to stand up. But I've always commended Metro for having multiple types of signage and messaging. And like Tino suggested, there could be, you know, visible digital signs. There could also be audible announcements on buses reminding people that some of the seats are reserved for seniors and people with disabilities. Are people who are WMATA bus riders more frequently than me, since I'm hardly ever ride them, aware of such announcements on buses for audible announcements?
Oh, bus, you know, are you talking about the announcements that occur periodically?
Yeah, on a bus, there's announcements like, you know, the next stop is blah, blah, blah. And that happens on a metro train also. But every now and then, especially when you're boarding, there'll be an announcement on a WMATA train reminding people, not at every stop, but, you know, fairly frequently, that there are seats reserved for seniors and people with disabilities. I was wondering if that also occurs on WMATA buses.
I haven't heard that sign, that, you know, that announcement specifically, Sandy. I've heard other announcements, but not that one.
It sounds like an opportunity, and if Anu can invite somebody to speak to us about that sort of topic, that would be great.
Tito, I'd like to support what you said, because on many of the WMATA buses there is a screen on the left side. It's just on the other side of the bus operator, and that screen often just shows different photos of the passengers, more security screen. And I know that it really, as I'm sitting there, it really doesn't help me with security. First, because it's a very small screen, and second, because I and I think other passengers have placed themselves in the positions where they feel most secure. I think, with respect to what you're talking about, that screen would be a perfect element for information. I think oftentimes it's just people don't know. People don't think about these things, and they don't know. And just by giving them an idea or telling them what's appropriate, they it's not an issue for them to do it. The best example for me is the please leave by rear door. I've always felt that the biggest impediment to buses moving more quickly out of a bus stop have been people wanting to leave, people who could leave from the rear door because they're close to the rear door, walking to the front and leaving from the front, making the individuals that are boarding needing to move back in order to accommodate these people who are alighting and slowing down the bus. I thought after stop requested and you have please leave by rear door, that's all it might take to reinforce that or to inform that for people who have never been asked before. Following up to what you said, sometimes the information makes all the difference.
Okay, Steve, actually, Rico had raised...
Tito, you have your hand up.
Unfortunately, I can't find the hands up button on my screen anymore. The format has changed around somewhat, so that's why I'm raising my hand. On this topic, in general, it might be useful to have someone in charge of announcements and on buses as well as on trains. Come and speak to us. And I'm not only talking about buses and trains as such, but even those visual posters that are in some bus stops. It wouldn't hurt to repeat those. Some people do look at those screens. I do. It won't solve everything 100%, but it'll, I hope, improve the situation than what it is now, as has been observed by other speakers. So Anu, for a bus rail meeting, could you have whoever is in charge or some coordinator dealing with screens and other messaging instruments to come and speak with us?
Sure, we can put that on one of the agendas. Yes.
Yeah. Pat. Do you remember we had, and I think it was a couple of times, a representative from WMATA who was extremely receptive to our comments regarding the length of the announcements,
right,
at the train stops?
Yeah,
I recall it became a very important issue to yourself, and I think, based upon your and other people's comments, they actually shortened that announcement.
Well, you might recall that He came to us at the last stop he would be making in his then current position. We haven't had anyone else as good and welcoming as he has been to our observations, questions, and statements. Let's have someone in charge of those audible and visual instruments come and talk to us about how they can use them for the benefit of people who are being left out. That is, people who are with a disability or a senior. Thanks.
Okay. Anu, I don't see any more hands up.
Okay, I think Rico might be the last person. Rico, go ahead. Rico, did you have any comments? Okay, perhaps not. So yes, that at this point we have no additional hands up.
Well, oh, Pat, please.
Yeah, did I just hear that the ASL interpreter left or got dropped from the call?
Well, we have one. We have an interpreter here.
Okay, good. I just didn't know if that was the case, and Rico needed further assistance. Good, thanks. Couldn't tell.
Okay.
Well, seeing no hands up and no further discussion and no public comments remaining, I'd like to propose that we adjourn the meeting. All in favor?
This is Sandy. I have one question. Anu, can you quickly remind us of what's the February 19th? There's a rollout. Has that been moved to
Waymaps?
For Waymaps?
Waymaps.
Is that set?
That is still tentative. I don't have, most likely it should be on that date, which is February 19th afternoon.
And you'll send out when you get it firmed up, you'll let us know.
Okay. Yes, I will.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you. So I move that the meeting be adjourned. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Steve.
Now, thanks. Janice Samuel, real quick.